I'm going to round off the research side of our presentation by talking about consumer horticulture in the human health realm. And I'm Sherry Dorn from the University of Georgia Department of Horticulture. We probably all are familiar with plants for health. We can think about nutrition being part of our health. We certainly get nutrition from the plants that we eat. And we understand the concept of plant cures, that we have derived medical benefits from plants since ancient times. When we think about horticulture and health, we can have three broad categories. We can have healing landscapes, those that provide that atmosphere conducive to recovery. We can have social horticulture or therapeutic culture or even green care, and that is, you know, that rehabilitation part, regardless of whether or not there's that goal-oriented program for health. And then we have horticultural therapy that has that trained therapist, that specific goals, a defined treatment program, and horticulture activities are used for that. So we're pretty familiar with those elements of horticulture and healthcare. Horticultural therapy has its roots in very ancient of times. You can go back to ancient Egypt and see where court physicians actually prescribed walks in palace gardens. And Natalie told us all about these therapeutic benefits of, these positive things that happen when we are observing nature or in that setting. But the interesting thing is that even horticultural therapy has its evolution, has its roots in our medical fields. And in fact, we owe it to the world wars to its larger adaptation and use. When we had large numbers of wounded veterans coming back needing rehabilitation, and because we are the Consumer Horticulture Master Gardener Professional Interest Group, we need to pay attention to the fact that because there were so many garden club volunteers, described as throngs of garden club volunteers, this effort became picked up. This idea of horticulture as rehabilitation was picked up by occupational therapists and really gave hort therapy its launch. But along the way in our hort therapy history, medical professionals have led that way, whether it's the psychologists, the psychiatrists, the occupational therapists. Hort therapy's early developments are rooted in the medical arena and not so much the horticulture arena. So fast forward to 2018, and we find ourselves in a time where horticulture is suddenly, front page. This is, especially community gardening is the solution to obesity and food insecurity and so forth. But we're in a time where dramatic healthcare costs increases. We've got a rapid rate of urbanization, which we've already talked about. We're concerned about our access and exposure to natural environments. We're concerned about mental disorders. Pick this line up: poor mental health in young people. They're inside all the time. They're not out and active. What about all the mental things going on? So as my teammates have presented some of the benefits, the many benefits that we get from consumer horticulture, we acknowledge that there are physical health benefits. We can look at studies about birth and how, patients' heart rates are lowered and their quality of care is rated higher. They have more positive APGAR scores, or, our rooftop gardens are good places for physical rehabilitation. Heart care, cardiac, pain perception, all of those things, all those physical health benefits can be connected to horticulture. And today, again, with those current medical concerns, those medical priorities of today, we're looking at the garden, the proximity to horticulture for vitamin G. That proximity to the garden influences the health outcomes. We also can look to the literature for documentation of social health benefits. I love Frederick Law Olmsted, and I realize even more as I dig into this why. He was a social horticulturalist as well as that premier landscape architect that designed all these public parks and gardens and so forth. But, he realized back in the 1800s that that parks and gardens, these settings, provide for counteracting the special evils which result from the confinement of life in cities. So we get all those attention restoration benefits. We get the socialization benefits. We find that the garden offers a low-key place for patients to interact, practice those communication skills, regain confidence, maybe improve their self-esteem. We find that gardens become third places. Those places, they're kind of neutral. It's not work, it's not home. It's a place where people get together and they come together and they're with people that they wouldn't ordinarily be either living with or working with. They're people different from themselves. And the interesting thing to note is that horticulturalists are the caretakers, the facilitators of these important third places. We can also attribute mental health benefits to engagement with plants, nature, gardening. Again, Olmsted rocks it with an unbending of the faculties. Love that. So we can find improvement from depressive states. We can improve our memory. As I'm working on my dissertation, all I have to do is step outside for a few minutes, pull a few weeds, you know, that quick interaction with nature. It's all good, right? So we've got dementia benefits, cognitive function. We've heard a lot of these things already today. We find stress reduction benefits in hospital settings, so gardens in hospital settings, not just for the patient, but we're finding increasingly benefits for the medical staff, the doctors, the nurses, the medical professionals that serve the patients. We've also heard about nutritional benefits, and we can connect this in our research, the gardening experience. Community gardeners eat more vegetables. Look at that number there at the bottom. So in a community garden, home gardeners, they were able to produce 60% of the total cups of vegetables recommended by U.S. dietary guidelines. So we know there are lots of benefits. We know that as people grow things, especially children, if they have the opportunity to grow it, they're more likely to consume it, try something different. I like to think of domestic or private gardens, as we talked about. We found that this particular piece found that domestic gardens had a greater effect on local area health deprivation than green space. So this is kind of echoing that last piece that Natalie introduced us to. And then look at that bottom bullet, the bottom two bullets, that you would think if you didn't have access to your own personal garden, that you would prefer, you would more frequently use a public green space. But in fact, it was just the opposite. Individuals with a personal garden or garden space were more active and more frequent users of those public green spaces. So I've thrown a bunch of research citations at you. You've heard from Natalie and from Esther as well. And so I asked that question, who is conducting this research? Well, I cited seven studies in those previous slides. Those seven studies had a combined number of 30 authors. And in those 30 authors, there was one registered horticultural therapist and three plant and environmental sciences. And we were discussing, our team was discussing, the plant and environmental sciences becomes a big title that includes horticulture sometimes, but is not exclusively horticulture. We find that horticulturalists are more often than not part of the research team behind these studies. We find that the medical professionals, the psychiatrists, the psychologists, the environmental psychologists are still leading the charge when it comes to documenting the health benefits of consumer horticulture. Throw up this case in point. We got really excited when we saw this recent paper, Teresa Hazen out of Oregon. She works in Portland and is instrumental with a lot of healthcare, health gardens and so forth there as part of the legacy healthcare system. She sent us this citations article, and I just couldn't wait to read it. So we've got this great article. We're saying it's great because it's got a cluster randomized trial, and we're evaluating, you know, these benefits of greening vacant land on mental health of community dwelling adults. All right, so I look at that lineup. All right, so the red letters are, those are the authors there. They are not horticulturalists. Emergency medicine, emergency care policy, epidemiology. We got a Forest Service person in there. Criminology, another epidemiology, and biostatistics and epidemiology. Where are our horticulture scientists? All right. We think of, or at least I do, think of Roger Ulrich as our superstar. He, you know, had that landmark study about, you know, hospital views and gardens and so reduced pain medicine and so forth. He is considered the most frequently cited researcher internationally. in evidence-based healthcare design. And yet, where does he come from? Is he a horticulturalist? No, he was the co-founding director for the Center of Health Systems and Design at Texas A&M, and he's now housed jointly in the Colleges of Architecture and Medicine elsewhere. So he is not in horticulture. We are not represented in this research. So I asked the question, how can horticulturalists contribute to critical research efforts? That's why we're here today. It's what we're after. You know, we've come to present several research gaps, and I maintain that our first step in being a part of this research is to address those research gaps. We have a need for empirical research. We need good research design, quality research, presenting those results as compelling results. We need to look at the mechanisms behind the relationships, and we need to figure out what landscape characteristics produce these results and what are critical for the health benefit, and how does this vary for segments in the population. But we also need to be mindful as we're conducting that research that we do it well, that we conduct quality research. These are some of the comments in that lit review that our team conducted last year. This is straight out of those papers that we found. Weak science, imprecise measurement of treatment and exposure. We need larger, more astute, epidemiologically designed studies to address limitations. And there's a growing appreciation for replication of results to back up those findings, to substantiate them. So we need to include experiential horticulture. We are consumer horticulturalists. We are part of NICHE. We are interested in expanding consumer horticulture and getting people gardening. And, you know, we beg the question, it's good for our industry to beg this question, you know, what is the importance of actually doing the gardening ourselves, the experiential part of it? And when I go back to that randomized trial, that article that we were all so excited about, those greening interventions, nobody was doing the gardening. The community residents weren't doing the gardening. It was the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society who came in to this community, designed the horticultural interventions, and carried them out. So they came in and planted the grass and cleared out the trash and planted the trees and watered and so forth. It wasn't the people in the community doing that hands-on horticulture. Again, what can we offer? What do horticulturalists offer? We have a lot to bring to this table. Just as Natalie described with that walk, you know, we can help people with plant selection. A lot of these settings, you know, we can set folks up for success. And if you're going to do the research, you want to make sure that these variables, these are silly mistakes to make, and, you know, really in the grand research realm, have adequate plant selection, perform maintenance appropriately. We can advise on horticultural tasks that are appropriate for the research questions at hand. We can advise on seasonality. Esther said earlier, you know, we're looking to horticulture and gardening, growing vegetables for a health cure, and yet we're not looking into season extension. We're not matching our cultivars with our regional growing conditions because the horticulturalists aren't in that conversation. So we have a lot to offer in terms of guiding the horticultural component and setting up our research to be quality, solid research. We also play a critical role as scientists engaged in that research conversation for ensuring healthy plants for healthy people. We've talked about urban planners, you know, and suddenly taking an interest in public health. That public health equation, we want healthy people, we want healthy communities. We're sort of at the stage where we understand that plants are part of that. But now, you know, all of a sudden, we're seeing an increased interest in having landscape planners, designers, managers at the table to make sure all of this works. It's important that horticulturalists be part of this research design, part of the implementation, so that all these activities, all these things that are second nature to us, designing, planting, maintenance, et cetera, are there, because that's going to improve the quality of the greenery, and that's significant in our research. So we bring the horticultural science as well, whether we're breeding square potatoes or potatoes for flavor and health. We can bring, you know, in this example for walkable communities, we bring the science that will help us find plants that are successful there and ultimately end up with those health benefits that we quest for. We also, as horticultural scientists, have the expertise in the background to set up those measures of the landscape that we need to find that are sensitive to the diversity of human experience there, so that we can help reduce those or remove those variables, those questionable variables that kind of dilute the significance of our findings. So in a rooftop therapeutic garden, it was found, you know, horticulturalists weren't engaged at the very beginning, and because of that, we had design flaws that compromised the patient experience as well as the ultimate project. So as horticulturalists, we also are so important for providing that authentic experience, that hands-on piece that is so important for our industry, our discipline. So I wind up here by reminding you, you all know this, horticulture is active. Horticulture is an active cultivation of plants. It implies that humans are involved in the act of gardening and tending our plants. We're not providing a wilderness experience, okay? And our research just really doesn't cross that boundary between gardened nature and wild nature. And we need to know, and we've got enough evidence so far to know that's a question that needs to be explored and vetted. And we know that this is, again, from the therapeutic horticulture rooftop garden project, that without horticulturalists at the table, that necessary expertise and vision may be missing. So we are a very important piece to horticulture and research. I love this line. I'm not going to put it on a T-shirt. You know, society needs the things that we do. There are lots of potential collaborators in the medical realm, psychologists, therapists, medical doctors, ecologists. As our friend Esther here says, we're not maximizing our collaborations in either direction. We can strengthen our science by working with them, and they can strengthen their science by working with us. If you know me, you know that I worked with Diane Rolfe and appreciate her perspective on human issues and horticulture, and pull this quote from a paper that she wrote with Jenny Lohr. Horticulturalists should become indispensable members of teams, in this context for addressing urban populations. But that's exactly right. We are indispensable members of these research team. So we need more opportunities, more research opportunities, such as this one where a public garden horticulturalist has been approached by a medical doctor to support a National Endowment for the Arts grant. And they're looking at plants for stress reduction of doctors. I want to be at that table. I want to be looking at these research questions. So with that, I will turn it over to Pam.